It's tip-off time.
The line, the jam!
Welcome to ESPN Chicago's Fast Break with Jay Hood and Chris Black.
Throws it to win it! Goal!
Listen on your phone through the ESPN Chicago app, on FM at 100.3 HD2, and on AM at ESPN 1000. Watch the show on Twitch.tv or the Twitch app. Follow ESPN 1000 Chicago. Now here are your hosts, Jay Hood and Chris Black.
It's Fast Break. I'm Chris Black along with Jonathan Hood in podcast form. There'll be no show this Saturday because of White Sox baseball and ESPN 1000. But we are here on a Thursday, Jonathan, heading to game three of the first round between the Bulls and the Bucks, and I did not expect to be having a conversation about a series tied, one game apiece. How about the Bulls last night? 114 to 110, meeting our expectations and surprising us, stealing a victory in Milwaukee last night. What a game.
We're in the afterglow of now a 1-1 series. I expected a gentleman's sweep, and that's still in play for Milwaukee. But the thing that you and I have talked about a lot already this season, Chris, is that no matter what offense is coming, DeMar DeRozan or Zach LaVine, wherever it's coming from, if you do not make stops, you do not win. And I think that that's the whole thing with the Bulls. Their slide that we documented at the end of the regular season, the way this team has had a hard time beating the top three teams in the East and West, it all comes from you're not making stops. And I thought, especially in the first half, man, what an effort defensively for the Bulls. I mean, that to me, more so than what the Bulls scored, 114 points against the Bucks, I just thought the defensive effort, the ability to have seven steals in the contest, they had 10 in game one, turning the Bucks over, going back in transition and scoring, the defense creating offense, that was key for the Bulls, I thought, on game two.
You know, before we really dive deep into specifics on game two, I want to have just one thought off of what you said, thinking it would be a gentleman's sweep.
Mm-hmm.
And you're right. It could still happen, right?
Sure.
Last night's game could wake up the Bucks. They could show up on Friday night in Chicago, blow the Bulls out, take care of business, get it back to Milwaukee, and end of story, right, next Wednesday. That could certainly be in play still. I feel as if, though, the way this would play out has a different vibe because of last night. Like, I assumed the gentleman's sweep before we got into the series would have been, hey, the Bulls get back to Chicago, the fans are there, they get one at home, and then that's all they can kind of muster, right? Mm-hmm. But I feel like going on the road and seeing DeMar DeRozan playing like he played all season long as an MVP, getting 41 points, going head-to-head with Giannis, guarding him for most of the fourth quarter, making tough shots, but also having like a measured approach. It wasn't just him firing away shots every possession. He was looking for his teammates. The teammates were hitting shots. And that, I think, changes the way I view something that could still happen, a gentleman's sweep. It's like the Bulls did show some backbone.
Sure.
And that's something we've been asking from them throughout the entire season. Show a little fight. Show something. And I feel like we finally got that. And even if you're right and we still get that gentleman's sweep, I feel like I have a different impression of what this team could possibly do someday in the future.
You know what I liked about Billy Donovan last night is that his press conference yesterday looked like either a Bulls win or a Bulls loss.
Yeah. I'm with you.
How is it that you had the same press conference? But I mean, there's no smile. There's no raising of the eyebrow. He's just straight ahead, just answering the question.
Just matter of fact, right?
Yeah. I mean, just because, Chris, he knows like we know, right? He understands what this is. He understands that there's a process with this basketball team. And this is not about Lonzo Ball being available or not. That's not what it's about. He's trying to do what he can with this group and to find out, you know, how much backbone, as you mentioned, how much moxie they have against the champs. It's the ultimate in tests for any basketball team when you take on the champs. Giannis Antetokounmpo cannot be stopped. He can't be stopped. He gave you 33 points and 18 rebounds if you're the Bucks. And actually, I can add another person. It looks like this Bulls team can't stop Lopez either. If he's going to go inside and score as often as he does, and also being able to knock down threes like he did, 3 for 6 from the three-point stripe, then he can't be stopped. But that doesn't mean that the others can't be slowed down. As I mentioned, this team with DeRozan was fantastic. I loved what I saw from LaVine. I liked what I saw from Vucevic as well. But it's more than just those guys scoring, though. If you're not tied together for this Bulls team, then you will lose like you normally lose against the upper echelon in the NBA.
Something that I saw from last night's game, if you look over the box score, you know, sometimes the box score doesn't tell you the story because almost in every category that matters, the Bucks won last night. They made more three-point shots. They double up the Bulls on free throw attempts. They shot 31 attempts to 15. They out-rebounded the Bulls. They had more points in the paint. They had more second-chance points. They had more fast-break points. They also only had three more turnovers. The Bulls had more fouls called on them throughout the game. And somehow the Bulls controlled the game from start to finish, right? Like, if you and I call a lot of college basketball games for the UIC Flames, and when we're sitting there in between each timeout, we look at the box score, and then we also can kind of use our eyes and say, yeah, what we're seeing with our eyes, here's the stat that matches what we're going to talk about here in this next offensive possession, this next defensive possession. If you look at the box score from last night, outside of the 41 points from DeMar DeRozan, the box score would tell you the Bucks played the better game, even though the Bulls controlled this thing from start to finish.
Yeah, there's no doubt. And a lot of that's led by Giannis. Yeah, see, the only issue I saw from the Bucks is that they were clunky in the first half offensively. And you're right, there's all these categories the Bucks did things well, except for being able to get over the amoeba defense of the Bulls, right?
Damn city got back there to get in front of Giannis. Standing guard.
Led by Caruso and his headband, right? It started with him, but that's what I like. And I also like Patrick Williams as well defensively in spots, that he looked really good as well. So it is true. All the things you mentioned are true, that were in the favor of Milwaukee, but they still struggle to be able to score the way they wanted to. They did not get easy shots. And they could have earned it from the foul line, doubling up the Bulls in the foul line. But I just think that's the reason why the Bucks fell short, is because of what the Bulls did defensively.
What if I told you this game should not have been as close as it was, 114 to 110? Under 3 minutes in the fourth quarter, I counted the Bulls having four open three-point shots, and they went 1 of 4 in those situations. Alex Caruso was on the right side, wide open, clanked it. He was also on the left side, wide open, and I think that ball barely grazed the front of the rim, which is tough to do from the side corner. Vooch had a straight-on three-point attempt, which he made, and Patrick Williams had a three-point attempt, I believe, from the right corner, which he also missed. So under 3 minutes, you have limited possessions in the game. DeMar's making the right play, finding guys open in the corner. The very best shot in the NBA. Mm-hmm. Corner three, and you had multiple misses. You go 1 of 4. You win the game by 4 points. But if you go 3 of 4 in that situation, it's a 10-point win, right? Like mm-hmm. the game actually doesn't get down to that final possession where I think the Bucks were down by 5 with like 18 seconds left. Like, something like that doesn't have to happen if those shots fall. I thought the decision-making by DeMar DeRozan in the fourth was stellar, because he was being, even though the shots were not falling, he was working with their offense. And it's something you and I have documented throughout this entire season. The reason Vooch is taking 8 three-point attempts in this game and 10 in the first one is because the offense is getting that shot open. And it's up to the players to perform. Tonight, or last night, Vooch went 4 of 8. Mm-hmm. That's a different outcome than going 2 from 10. But I think the shots still have to happen. I don't think the answer is don't shoot that shot. You got to still shoot it. You just have to make it.
Yeah, there's no doubt. And Milwaukee's going to give him that shot, too. They see Vucevic as a guy, if he's able to do what he did and get half his three-point shots, not as a concern. It was not a concern in game one, because if you just watch those plays, it's not like Lopez is going to go out there and guard him. It's not like Giannis is going to go out there. I like the side-to-side movement offensively by the Bulls, moving the ball side-to-side on a drive and a kick. There's Vucevic always there, because the bigs for the Bucks are already in the painted area. So if on a driving kick, if Vucevic is out there, it's like, all right, take that shot. Go ahead. But we just can't have DeRozan and LaVine beat us, and we know that Vucevic is not going to beat us. He's going to get his share of rebounds. He'll be in the 20-10 category more than likely in a number of games in this series, but he's not going to be a guy that's going to kill us from three. But 4-for-8 is an improvement for sure. I don't know what Budenholzer does with that, but I just know his bigs are not coming out to try to stop him because they look at Vucevic and they say, okay, he can hit that, hit some shots. 4-for-8, maybe they raise their eyebrow just a little bit.
You know, it's funny. A theme to this Bulls season would be, especially with bloggers out there, mm-hmm. the drop zone defense. Yeah, Donovan sucks.
Yes.
Donovan sucks because of the drop zone defense. I don't know. I watched, when I rewatched the game this morning, I watched Adam Amin and Stacey King. But last night I was watching the TNT call.
So did I.
Did you catch Greg Anthony calling out the Bucks for continuously playing the drop zone defense and the Bulls killing them with Vooch hitting those three-point
yep.
shots.
Yeah, and I watched that exclusively, the TNT version.
Yeah, right, right. So it's just funny to me that all season long, people who only watch Bulls games think Donovan sucks because of the drop zone defense. And like what you and I tried to nicely suggest to others throughout, you know, those who are watching, who are listening to these shows, these podcasts throughout the years, that this is how you play defense basically in the league. Like many teams are playing this drop zone defense if you have a big who you want to protect the rim. Mm-hmm. Right. Like I just thought it was funny, and I'm glad you watched the TNT too and heard yeah. that, because I chuckled to myself. It was like, I wonder how many Bulls fans who've been calling our station heard that and go, oh, wait, other teams do that too? Oh. Oh, okay. Oh, all right. So it's just not Donovan being a terrible head coach? Okay.
Hey, what's with this fancy 3-2 point zone defense? What does that right. mean? What is that?
Right.
What is that? I don't understand. He sucks.
He's terrible. He's terrible.
You do have to recover, though, in those spots, right?
Yeah, yeah.
You
but, do. Like, the reason teams do it, right, is because off of the pick and roll, if you drop the big, you make it more difficult for the guard to get all the way to the rim. And that's the right. the challenge is for the big. And there's very few in the league who can actually do both, where you can get back, cover the rim, and then also make it all the way back out to the perimeter and then cover that three-point shooter. And that's why being a three-point shooting big is so lethal in today's game. But it also points to why Rudy Gobert is an absolute game changer, because he can do it. You know, Vooch mm-hmm. struggles at times doing it, but I think at times he's doing exactly what the defense is designed. And you saw it last night. Brooke Lopez was having the same issues Vooch has had throughout the season getting back out there to cover Vooch. It's the right. exact same situation.
And it's just like, and the big doesn't want to exert that much effort. Like, go ahead.
Yeah, right.
There's a lot of that in the league too.
Right.
Go ahead, man.
Especially, you know, like in February, right?
Yeah. Just go ahead. Like,
go right on with it.
It's like I tell Cap, I go, there's a lot of, go ahead, you know, you're more than likely going to miss that shot. Oh, you made it. Okay, we'll get it back on the other end. We'll shoot another three, get back. And I know, as I mentioned, as the rosters get tighter, there'll be more of an emphasis on being able to be stronger defensively. So that's my whole thing. I was just impressed, Chris, about how they performed in the first half defensively, because you watch how the Bucks were able to get to their spots. Usually Holiday can get what he wants, right, especially from three.
Yeah.
You see Middleton before he went down. You know, again, he doesn't need a lot of space to be able to get his shot up. And I just thought that the Bulls made it a lot more difficult. I saw two or three different looks defensively by the Bulls. Did you see the same? I think that was one of the keys also to the game.
Yeah, and Patrick Williams doesn't have to be a Giannis stopper, but right. I think him being able to play the 32 minutes that he played and only picking up four fouls, I think is interesting. He doesn't have to be a stopper, but he also can't be glued to the bench. And just being out there every single possession, I think does have an effect on Giannis, and you're not going to stop him. But being able to have Patrick Williams there, to have Caruso chip in and to double and to help out, and also Vooch to not really get in serious foul trouble until we got to the 7-minute mark in the fourth quarter, the collective effort, I thought, was excellent on defense. One thing I wanted to ask you about, fourth quarter, 7 minutes left, Vooch picks up his fifth foul. At that time, Billy Donovan goes to the bench, brings in Tristan Thompson. At that moment, I was thinking, if I were in this situation, I'm going small, because the Bucks had their bigs out there. They had Lopez and Antetokounmpo out there. And I was wondering, you know, what if you just change it completely on them and you try and go small? You have Caruso body Giannis. You don't worry about Lopez because you know that, like, Derek Jones could guard him. Or you could maybe do something else with Patrick Williams. I'm surprised that they didn't go Derek Jones in that spot. What do you think of the way that played? Now after Thompson
Jones
only played a minute 25, and then Vooch came right back in, which is a dangerous situation because he was basically playing five and change to the end with five fouls.
Well, Derek Jones would have been a little more flexible, a little bit more athletic in that situation, right? More so than Tristan Thompson. Now, you like the sharp elbows of Tristan Thompson getting Portis out of the game, but I would have thought that Derek Jones Jr., you know, if you put him on the floor in that situation, you know what he's there for. You don't worry about his scoring. You just want him to be able to cover. And I think that Derek Jones Jr. could have done that. Well, with Tristan Thompson, though, there's that toughness. There's that ability to utilize, you know, his forearms and his elbows to get up on Bobby Portis. I just think that he didn't want the veteran big to just sit there and not have some meaningful time. I mean, he's out there for, let's see, 7 minutes, and he had three rebounds. So, I know he believes in Tristan. It's just that, man, it's about guards. It's about your starters as much as possible. And, you know, I've been mentioning how these rotations get shorter. Tristan Thompson just, in some ways, doesn't fit, right? I mean, at least that's what I see. But Derek Jones Jr. probably would have been given a little bit more athleticism. And Green got some time as well.
Yeah, Green, Javonte Green had 5:27 played in the fourth quarter. Outside of that, Thompson played the minute 25 in for Vooch.
Yeah.
Other than the Green 5 minutes there, you had your starters out there for the entire quarter. I think that's also a risky way to live. I don't think in the NBA you can go to the max playing your starters in the fourth quarter 12 minutes a night. I think that's tough. I think you need to find a way to shave off 4 minutes off of DeMar, another 4 minutes off of Zach, and you got to find a way to get some kind of effort from your bench players to allow your guys to close in the final 8 minutes of the game. I think that's a... that's a really tough, you know, like, and maybe Bulls fans are unaware of, like, how other teams utilize rotations. But, like, do you remember when Golden State were playing in the finals all those years in a row? Mm-hmm. Like, Stephen Curry wouldn't enter back into the game in the fourth quarter till the 6 minute mark.
Right.
And you might say, well, that's half the quarter. But yeah, the moment he entered the game, he was on 100. Right, like he was ready to go and then close out that contest. So I just think in today's current landscape of the NBA, to ask your starters to play the entire fourth quarter, I think that's tough. I think that's really tough.
Well, Chris, if they don't, they lose the game.
No doubt. Yeah.
And with those Steph Curry teams, at least you had, well, you know, and especially when they were really rolling, you had Clay, you had Draymond, you had Andre Iguodala, guys that could hold it down. See, this is what you look at for next season, in which you look at that bench and you have Kobe White, who scored 5 points, and you don't have much else. Now, you have three guys that I could depend on defensively in short bursts: Thompson, Derek Jones Jr., and Green. Dosunmu is not going to get a lot of time. And there's where it comes down to, where Dosunmu, for the regular season, did a nice job. But you know a veteran coach like Billy Donovan is just not utilizing a lot of young players. He's just not.
Yeah.
And I'll compare that to Milwaukee, where at least the Bucks have two guys off that bench that can knock down shots. And that's Connaughton and Allen. They didn't shoot the ball well the other night. But at least you have two guys there. Bobby Portis is a guy that is a glue guy, energy guy coming off the bench for them. You can go at Carter as well as a lead guard for them. Ibaka didn't get time because he doesn't fit in today's playoffs. And so that's the difference. It's about max effort and playing your starters as much as possible just to survive against the champs. That because you look at how the ebb and flow of this game went, Chris. Philly really trusts seven players. Maybe. Maybe.
Six.
I mean, look at it.
Probably six.
I mean,
let me ask you this. Does he even trust Coby White?
No.
And Coby White's your best bench player.
He won't be here next year.
Yeah, you know, it's what's funny is as you watch other games in the playoffs, it's why personality scouting matters, right? Like, Coby White is a very nice person.
Right.
I don't know if he has that killer instinct in him. And you can see it from young players from the jump. You have Mann with the Clippers. You have Maxey with the Sixers. You have Poole with the Warriors. You have young guys, Scottie Barnes with the Raptors. Young players, when they get it. And I even think that, you know, for all the negative conversation around Patrick Williams, I don't think that he shies away from the moment. He just seems like someone that at the moment there's others who have to do what they do, and he's just playing at a reserved role within the starting group to kind of make it all work. But like Coby White doesn't have that killer in him. And I think that's where you look at the personality, and he had a bad turnover last night.
Yes.
Early, and he looked at the, I don't recall who it was that the pass was bad to, but like he looked and he had like a smirk on his face, like, oh, it's so like, what do you mean? Like, how is that the look on your face? Like, you can be upset. You could be like focused, but like the like smirking, half smile, childish like look, like that doesn't work in a playoff game. And there's just something missing. He has the talent. But like that's why I started off by saying like scouting the personality matters.
Well, I want to make sure it's clear that for those that are listening, no one's saying on this podcast, I know Chris has not said it, and he knows damn well I have not said it. No one's saying that Coby White should have been traded at the deadline.
No.
Especially for some veteran backup big that wouldn't get meaningful playing time, like Tristan Thompson, as a matter of fact. So we're not saying that. What we're saying is that at the time of the deadline, if you could not make a significant upgrade for your three-point shooting off the bench, then you might as well just keep Coby White. And Coby had some terrific games.
Yeah.
This team's had injuries and COVID, and so when all this is happening, Coby White and Adesumu stepped up nicely either as a starter or coming off the bench and provided a spark. What we're saying is that once the season's over, if you're Karnaschovas and Eversley, you got to look at this simply and you look at other rosters that will have a deep playoff run and say, okay, you know what, we like our five, or we like four of our five as far as our starters, but we have to find guys that can be able to be shooters, multiple shooters coming off our bench. And I think Dosunmu is the future, but you have to upgrade with Coby White, because Coby at this point in time, because he's been so up and down, perfect, absolute chef's kiss, Sacramento King.
Yeah, that's what it feels. You talk about scouting personalities. Io is a perfect example of that. He has the personality. He just doesn't quite have the skill set. But I think most basketball people would bank on the skill set figuring itself out if the personality matches. You know, if the hunger, the fight, the killer is there. Like, Io hasn't looked overmatched in the minute. He hasn't played a lot of minutes, but he looks like he belongs out there. So it's been cool to see. All right. Friday night, game three at the United Center. Sunday, game four. So the weekend set now has, I think, a little bit more pizzazz behind it, because Bulls fans can show up and show out this weekend for a double dip. And this is actually a series, which I didn't expect us to be talking about heading into this weekend.
Well, at the time of this taping, Chris and I don't know what's happening with Chris Middleton. All we know is that Woj on ESPN says that Middleton's MRI is going to take place at the time of the taping, and it's going to give a clearer indication of the severity of the MCL sprain and the possible timeline on a return. So I will just have an educated guess, Chris, and tell you that Middleton will not play in Game 3. Now, I'm not trying to be a dream killer. I just know that whether it's A, B, or C, 1, 2, or 3, as far as the grade of the sprain, like, I don't expect him to play. And so because he's not going to play, we'll just do the podcast this way. So if Middleton's not playing, then who replaces that production? A guy that can give you a ton. He had 18 points before the injury in game two. And I know that the shine's always on Giannis, but the Robin to that Batman in Giannis is Chris Middleton. 20 points a game, you know, gives you 5 rebounds, 5 or 6 assists, and really kind of, in the, as far as the starters, a glue guy for this Bucks team. Not saying that the Bucks will lose without him, but it's going to be more difficult, is it not?
My answer to your question would be, can Grayson Allen and Pat Connaughton give you 10 each? I don't think either one has to pick up the 20 points of Chris Middleton, but could you get 10 from each to replace? I don't know. I feel like you could certainly count on one of them stepping up. Probably Connaughton.
Probably more Connaughton than Allen.
Yeah. And, you know, Grayson's going to be in for it. You know, Bulls fans are not going to forget what took place this year, right, with Caruso. So you know there's going to be a little cheap shot at some point. The Bulls fans are going to go off the handle. There's probably going to be some technicals thrown. Not something I would have expected if this was 2-0 Bucks. But now that it's 1-1, I think there's going to be a little chestiness from the Bulls. You know, and this is how you get your revenge, right? And if you're a Bucks fan, you're right, Jonathan. It's tough. You're going to have Jrue Holiday step up. Giannis is going to have to take it to a new level. Something we've seen him do in the past in the NBA Finals last year. So he's certainly capable of doing it. But it certainly levels the playing field a little bit more, where this was heavily tilted towards the Bucks. Without Middleton, that's a major loss. And an MCL sprain, Jonathan, you say you can probably safely assume he's not going to play in Game 3. Mm-hmm. I would imagine Sunday is out too. You know, an MCL sprain, I would imagine the earliest you're going to see Chris Middleton is probably game 5.
Maybe.
Right? Like, that's Wednesday.
Yeah.
You know, so you got a full week to kind of let it heal. But I would be surprised if we see Middleton this weekend. But you never know.
And so because of that, and the Bulls playing at the United Center, now it's more than just a gentleman's sweep. Because, once again, the formula is, you're not going to stop Giannis. So just put that to the side. He's just a great player, and he breaks through any kind of defense you put out there. He'll break through the guardrails to get to the basket. So then there's Lopez also. And I still consider him a factor only because of the lack of resistance around the rim, where Lopez can get easy baskets.
They can't stop him at all.
All right. I mean, it's just not big enough. Like, that should be Patrick Williams coming over to help, but I mean, he gets all of, like, even the, just a sloppy buckets, like loose ball, just flings it up there and scores because of his height. So, and I saw that several times already in the series. Now what happens? Now, I mean, without Middleton, Connaughton can be able to knock down threes. How many threes? And so that, I mean, that's the factor to me. I mean, Holiday is going to have to take another step up. And so what are the Bulls going to do about it? A healthy enough Bulls team against Middleton out. I expect Portis with the eye issue to play in Chicago. If not game 3, then game 4, I think he'll be fine. But how do the Bucks replace that scoring? And what does that mean now for the series if the Bulls, say, if they win on Friday?
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Well, Travis Wacker has been telling me up until the series that the game 4 early start in Chicago is going to be a problem for the Bucks, because apparently Giannis doesn't like early games. So he's been saying before the series started, the Bulls will get that Sunday game. So last night after the game, you know, there's texts going back and forth, but I didn't say anything when the Bulls were up big.
Mm-hmm.
Game ends. And I respond, I go, you know what, Travis? I think you're right. I think the Bulls do get that game on Sunday. And after they get Friday, the Bucks will be going home Wednesday night down 3-1.
Silence.
He did not respond.
he put the phone up then, huh?
Yeah.
And he put the phone up and showed you another picture of a pizza pie. That's what he did. That's what he decided to do.
It's just outstanding.
All right. A few news and notes here. about what happened on Wednesday. Oh, Brooklyn. Oh. So here's Boston up 2-0 on Boston, on Brooklyn. How about them Celtics, man? You talk about a 180 turn for a basketball team from the second half to where they are right now. I asked you the question, who else steps up between besides Durant and Irving? And I said that Bruce Brown would be the third guy. That's still not enough, man.
No.
Still not enough.
No, it's not. And my one thought on this series is I agree. Boston's a better team.
Oh.
Is Durant's play because of how good Boston is, or is it naive to expect Durant to play as poorly as he has the rest of the series? He's an all-time great. I would imagine at some point he's gonna correct the way he's kind of shot the ball in the last two games.
So Simmons is just not going to play, huh? Ben Simmons not going to play? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And by the way, I'm not telling you that's the difference between the Nets winning the series and not, but all hands on deck in the postseason.
Sure, especially when you're down 2-0. Did you see that Brian Windhorst is reporting that Devin Booker is going to be out 2 to 3 weeks?
Oof.
I believe that's what, as we were recording this, that just came out. 2 to 3 weeks from Brian Windhorst with a right hamstring strain. Could miss 2 to 3 weeks.
That will not affect the series against the Pelicans.
No, it shouldn't.
It will not.
But now
moving forward, as far as them trying to win the championship, I made the declaration in our last fast break. If they don't get it done, this is it for Phoenix. This is it.
Ayton leaves. Yeah. CP3 is kind of
done.
This is his run.
This is it.
I will say in the next round, though, they would face off against Utah or Dallas, and I think they're still okay in that situation, right? Isn't that how the bracket would play out?
Yeah, but a healthy Luka at that point. At that point, it's Luka. If they survive the series, too, that's the other thing, Chris. Like, I don't know if Dallas is going to win the series against Utah. I don't know that.
Yeah, no, right. And if Luka is healthy, then I feel like that they're the better team. But, you know, that was a pretty incredible performance in Game 2 from Jalen Brunson. You can't expect that every night without Luka.
My man's going to get paid. Jalen Brunson, he's getting paid. I saw the same thing you saw about Devin Booker. So, yeah, so that's difficult. That's hard on the Suns. But if this will not be a problem against the Pelicans, though, even though Brandon Ingram looked really good. That I'm happy for him because those guys, and I watched that game all the way through, Chris. I watched it all the way to the end, even though I work mornings. I just like that's never going to leave me. I'm still going to be watching late night basketball.
It's great. This is the best time of year.
So I enjoy watching Ingram roll. They did a good job against the Suns.
File this away for a different maybe use it on Cap and Jay Hood tomorrow.
Yeah.
Which team is closer to a championship, the Pelicans or the Bulls?
It's a hell of a question.
I mean, Ingram is
wow.
Like you'd say, okay, DeRozan's the best player, but Ingram's better than LaVine, and so is CJ McCollum, I think. What if Zion never gets healthy and they have like a gajillion first round picks in the future?
Wow, that's a hell of a question there. Well, can I get through the Bucks series?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Because I don't want to tell you.
This is a question I came up with before last night.
I don't want to tell you like the Pelicans and the Bulls pull off some like miracle, right? I don't want to do that because then I'll be tortured forever. And shout out to Philly. Again, Toronto was a nice story, but that's the end.
Yeah.
And once again, sir, the MVP stepped up.
Yeah,
my MVP. I'm Skip Bayless now. My MVP, Joel Embiid, 33
my
points
MVP.
And 13.
And then you'll go on the talk for 17 straight minutes before before Shan Sharp's allowed to speak.
Why doesn't FS1 have any commercials? I mean, they're like they're like we were in college, man, yeah. where it's like you saw the log in college and it was just like, you know, like...
2 minutes for the hour, huh? All right.
Yeah, 2 minutes for the hour, and one of them was just a PSA.
Yeah, just a PSA.
that's what FS1 is, like 18 minutes on the same subject.
Oh, man.
My MVP, my guy, it's my turn to talk, it's my turn. Joel Embiid with 33 points and 13 rebounds. So they're taking care of Toronto. But you mentioned Maxey earlier. See, it's even more than Harden. Now you've got three guys that can hurt you.
Yeah.
The only thing that stops them now is Doc.
100%. I mean, listen, when you have Joel Embiid and he's hitting game winners like he did last night, like, yeah, that can make up for a lot of bad coaching. But I feel as if the shine off of Doc's coaching has really started to dull.
You think Nick Friel regrets taking the Brooklyn job and not staying with Golden State?
Yep. And I text him every night after.
Every night.
Yeah. Yeah, because I say to him, how different would your day be knowing that you're going to cover the champs?
You know
Kyrie.
That Yeah. This is Kyrie can you know what.
The unnamed MMA podcast is here to record, so we have to go.
Well,
yeah, I'm just saying this is how the studio time in the afternoon works here at ESPN 1000.
All right. Well, I had a thought about the new death lineup of the Warriors.
Believe me, I could do an hour Substack podcast on that too. I was thrilled.
Well, then I'm done talking.
You can listen to Jonathan Hood weekday mornings, 7 to 10 with Cap. Cap and Jay Hood, our new morning show at ESPN 1000. Check it out each day right here on ESPN 1000.
Jordan and Adam, I don't want them to get upset, so I'll just stop talking. That's what I'll do. We'll just stop the old basketball, the old fast break. That's what we'll do.
You can hear me weeknights, 6 to 8, with Adam Abdallah.
Guess we'll just stop.
Part of the unnamed MMA podcast coming up next on your podcast cycle at ESPN 1000. Bleck and Abdallah, weeknights, 6 to 8.
I'll just stop talking.
All right. Until the next Fast Break podcast, we'll figure out a time next week throughout the week because Saturday there will be White Sox baseball. No Fast Break this week, but we'll come back to you next week in podcast form. For Jonathan Hood, I'm Chris Bleck. This has been Fast Break on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN Chicago app.
Some Memphis, Minnesota thoughts, and, we're going to talk about old cage fighting. That's what we'll do, some cage fighting. That's right. We'll just stop talking. All right. There you have it.